Welcome to the Doctor Who podcast from Casterbus. My name is Christian Colley, and with me is a gentleman called James McLean. We've been doing this podcast for years. Not this podcast, although this is actually the second time we've done this podcast, because we recorded one last week and unfortunately got lost in the ether. And so it does feel a little bit Groundhog Day. Yes, we've been recording this podcast for years. Well, no, we actually started doing this together in 2011, I think, or 2010. Was it 2010 or 11? It was around then, wasn't it?
I'm trying to think whether we covered season 5 or not. I don't think we did.
No, I don't think so. I'm not 100% certain. I could look into it, but I haven't. You know, I'm just talking off the cuff, dear listener.
Yeah, I'm just curious.
I have no idea what the actual thing is. We actually started the podcast in 2007. It's myself and Brian Turnover. 10 to 15 minutes of utter nonsense every 3 months or whatever it turned out to be. It seemed very difficult to mount a podcast in those days, whereas these days you can basically do one on your phone, can't you?
Yeah. Well, you know, these days podcasts are probably a bit long.
Yeah, possibly, potentially. And you can record stuff on Twitter now. You can have conversations on Twitter, like voice conversations on Twitter. This says the tech journalist. I'm only just getting used to the whole concept of speech to text, to send text messages. So I can save time with typos. Well, that doesn't always work well. Anyway, we're getting off the point. Loads has happened in the past few weeks with Doctor Who. If you listen to our last podcast, you'll know that Russell T Davies is set to become involved with the show again, and with Bad Wolf Productions involved with BBC Studios. And now it turns out last week Sony's buying Bad Wolf Studios. There was a Doctor Who teaser trailer. There was a full Doctor Who trailer for season 13. The next season of Doctor Who, which starts on October the 31st and is 6 episodes long and is called Flux. And there is a new Doctor Who game out on PC and PlayStation 4, I think. And also there's a new Doctor Who mobile game, which has been out for a couple of months. It's a bit mind-blowing, actually, for a show that has a comparatively lower profile than it did 10 years ago, that such a lot should be going on in such a short space of time, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And stuff looks quite fairly quality as well. The game looks quite reasonable.
Well, I was going to leave that to later, but let's do that now. My son Bruce has been playing the mobile game.
Okay.
And that is kind of cleverly, it's a mobile game. It's based around a phone. And it has one of the Osgoods. And I'm not sure which one. And Lawrence from Blink, talk about a niche character. You didn't expect to see Doctor Who again. Obviously, they couldn't afford Kerry Mulligan. And it's kind of like a found footage, messages, mystery sort of thing. Now, there are other games like that, but they've done a really good job of adapting this around a mystery of a character going missing. Wary of giving away spoilers, because it is really quite a good intensive and immersive game, considering it's a mobile game. I think that's worth checking out. I feel it's possibly at this stage going to be a more satisfying adventure than The Edge of Reality. I've played the first stage of The Edge of Reality, and I found it a little disappointing, although it is atmospheric. The controls are a little bit confusing and not intuitive, and there's no easy way to check what the controls are either. You can't, you know, traditionally in first-person games or even third-person games, you can just press the escape button, check the options, and see the controller mappings or the key mappings, and that you can't do that with this. You've basically got to guess what the keys are if you weren't paying attention earlier on.
That's odd.
Yeah. And Jodie Whittaker is her usual ebullient self in it, so that's good. And that kind of gets you through some quite trudgy bits. I'm at the beginning of the second stage, so I can't really report back more on that. It's derived from a VR game that was released last year, I think, or the year before, certainly in the last 18 months or so. And it goes in different directions. It sort of enhances the original VR game without the VR element. It's worth checking out. It's only £20 in UK money for a PC game. That's not too bad. I've recently reviewed a compilation of Space Invaders versions from across the ages for Nintendo Switch. And although that had 10 games on it, it was like £55.
Good old Nintendo.
Yeah. But I think Taito and the license holder have something to do with it that being quite so expensive, because there's really only, you know, three games that are actually worth having that you possibly haven't played or wanted to actually play on a Nintendo. As a, you know, Black and White Space Invaders is, you know, you can get that in most places, or Full Colour Space Invaders and all the clones, whatever. Anyway, we're drifting away from the point. I would definitely recommend the mobile game. I would need to play the Jodie Whittaker starring game a bit more before I can give it a full review, though, I think.
Mm-hmm. What's the what demographic is the mobile game aimed at, do you think?
Well, I tell you what, shall we have a look and see what the... I think it's PEGI 12. So that is a clue that who it's not aimed at, I suppose. I'm just opening
this. Is it?
Well,
I suppose what you mean, young kids?
Yeah,
what do you mean?
Yeah. It's not aimed at the very young child, yeah.
Okay.
I'm searching for... It's not appearing. Why isn't it appearing? Oh, because it's called The Lonely Assassins and you're ignoring it. Yeah, so it's by Maze Theory. And I think the desktop game is also Maze Theory. Although I
was going to ask.
I will accept corrections on that. It's highly rated by fans. It's got 1,555 ratings, although, of course, these days you can't trust ratings on anything. So
no.
I wouldn't pay too much attention to that. But, you know, my son's enjoyed it a lot. There's clues to uncover. There's passcodes and little puzzles to work out and stuff. And there's like, but as I say, it's based around the phone. So you've got kind of like text messages and voicemails and stuff and kind of wiki entries to check in the browser for... I'm looking at one. There's a screenshot on the Play Store. Into the unknown.web. Now that's a real website telling you about the Drumlins' disappearances at West of Drumlin. So it's nice and immersive. It harks back, obviously, to Blink, bearing in mind the characters I've told you about. But yeah, it's worth checking out. I think it does a nice thing for Doctor Who on a mobile, which hasn't been done so far. You know, Doctor Who's previous successes on mobile have been programming and duel games. So
it does feel like there's a little bit of a sort of creative renaissance going on with Doctor Who that, you know, I felt for a few years and under no criticism of any leadership, it has kind of felt like that sort of innovation has sort of vanished.
Mm-hmm.
And what you were getting was a TV show. And I think this sort of extends to the back end of Moffat's era and the Chibnall era as well. And it seems more recently, that, again, just as a purely third-party comment, it does kind of feel like there's a little more of a drive, creative drive behind it. I mean, the VR game went largely, well, from my point of view anyway, went largely unnoticed last year. I remember the bit of hype over it, but, you know, again, there was stuff there. You know,
well,
there was the Dalek stuff last year as well. And, you know, the video game, mobile game, and some of the sort of promotional and the use of the sort of peripheral agents of the Doctor Who Empire at the moment, sort of things like the website and their social media output. So they did a Spot the Difference the other day with a Weeping Angel shot. I haven't seen them do that for a while. It's just these sort of, I don't know, hooks seem to be popping out. It's as if, going back to what you originally said, that there's a feeling of surprising agency or surgence of engagement or an attempt to engage that I don't feel I've seen for a while.
Mm. Yeah, I'd agree with most of that, I think. I wonder if it's a case of... Oh, back on the mic. I wonder if it's a case of there maybe being opportunities in new areas, but also the right people in the right time deciding that maybe... I mean, I'm kind of echoing maybe what happened in the Wilderness years, where it's kind of like fan-produced projects and official and unofficial were, A, all we had, B, a lot of them were rather high quality for what they actually were, and obviously we don't have the limitations that we don't, you know, we're not limited by analog or very expensive digital stuff now. Everything's very cheap. I'm talking generally here. I'm not talking about video games specifically. And maybe people feel that maybe there's better approaches that they can be, that can be explored in different mediums that TV is not delivering at the moment.
I think that's kind of what I'm feeling, that there's almost like maybe creative is the wrong word, because it could be sort of almost like a sort of a commercial savvy on how to reach out around the TV show in a cheap but effective, cheap is a relative term, but in a cost effective way. I mean, video games, to some degree, those agreements, I don't know how the money works in those agreements. It depends on what was contracted. But things like, I noticed the other day, and I don't know for how long they've been doing this, but certainly seemed to be a little more obvious of late, is the sort of far more greater integration of Big Finish into the BBC promotional side. Mm. Where I've always felt that it's always been very sidelined. And, you know, you go to the Doctor Who channel on YouTube, and a great deal of the videos there are promotional things for the Big Finish material.
Yeah.
Which
there was a new one just today, I think, for the John Pertwee era Draconian adventure that's just coming out.
Yeah. So there seems to be like there's more of like a cohesive approach to Doctor Who that's sort of emerging, maybe for a while, and I've only just spotted it. But it certainly feels different to how it did a couple of years ago, where it felt very much like it just focused on the television show. And everything else was largely doing its own thing. And it just feels like there's a little shift there. And it could be, as you say, because budgets are tight. And maybe that, you know, produces a different way, a different perspective in how you look at your products and your franchise and what you own. Maybe it's that, maybe it's coincidence. Maybe it's just something that's always happening. I haven't noticed, but it does feel like there's just a little more, I don't know, sort of as you thought, I guess, or attention or care that's going on around the show. Yeah. And including Flux, which again, as we'll go on to say in a minute, which might be a good segue, is a very different beast in itself. It doesn't feel like it's the same material being brought out in a mildly different way. And I imagine part of the way the Flux has been written has deliberate production and political reasons of why it is what it is. I don't think it's just solely that there was a drive to try and change Doctor Who to try a sort of 6-episode season and see how creatively that works. I suspect, like most things, it's a, there is a drive of business behind it and the politics that surrounds it. But again, it feels different. So, yeah.
Yeah, it certainly does. So we'll move on to Flux, as I guess everyone's calling it. I'm imagining there's individual episode titles. It's going to cause some confusion. It's going to be 1986 again, the title of the Time Lord, Trial of the Time Lord Part 1, The Mysterious Planet Part 1, etc.
I've heard a lot of people sort of calling back to Trial of the Time Lord, and I don't know. I wonder if those comparisons are going to end up being a bit...
I think they'll probably be superficial.
Flimsy.
Yeah.
I mean, it's easy to say. I mean, you could, in a way, you could say every story of Doctor Who is a Trial of the Time Lord, because it's in, certainly classically, in 4 to 6 parts. You know, that's what Trial of the Time Lord did. You know, each part is its own kind of story. It kind of feels a bit of a like a, and I think the reason people pulled or gravitate towards it in terms of Doctor Who fandom is because it has a low, it kind of has a low value of appreciation. And there's still a certain suspicion and hesitancy around Chibnall through a lot of that sort of, should we call hardcore or should we call dedicated? I think it's probably a nicer term, dedicated fandom. And I think that is what they're poking at more. I don't really think it's going to be a fair comparison until we see it. I think, like we've said before, or maybe we didn't because I don't know if we aired it, I think Children of Earth is going to be a better comparison to what they're doing.
Yes, we've mentioned that in our Mysteriously Lost podcast. Most
it was
definitely.
In a Mysteriously Lost one, was it?
It was, yes, yes.
Children of Earth. And people don't gravitate towards that, perhaps because it was quite successful. No one talks about how that mini, that, you know, I mean, again, it was over several days rather than weeks, but I think we might have talked about this on air. That was a very successful story in terms of it being a episodic.
Yes.
So why not be comparing it to that? But we're not. We're comparing it to Trial of the Time Lord.
Apparently, I noticed on Twitter, we recalled Children of Earth a few couple of years ago. So I think when it was it 2008 it came out, or 2009. So we probably did a podcast by in 2018 or 2019, and that there's some amusing quote was made in the podcast about a toilet, which was then retweeted and or liked on Twitter, which I it's like momentous toilet or something or ridiculous like that. But I'm digressing because I've just been I'm just about to pull up some notes about Flux, and I've discovered that there's a Doctor Who card game called Flux with two X's.
I'm stuck on the momentous toilet now. I want to know what we said. I don't remember. I don't remember anything we say, so.
No, I don't either. So
Anyway.
Flux with two X's is a card game in which the cards themselves determine the current rules of the game. By playing cards, you change numerous aspects of the game: how to draw cards, how to play cards, and even how to win. At the start of the game, each player holds three cards, and on a turn, a player draws one card and then plays one card. I hate card games. I cannot play cards. My outlaws, as we'll call them, come round every so often on a Saturday evening, and we'll sit at the table and play cards. And I basically have to be taught the rules of the game every single time. I cannot do card games. I can do, RP, like single player role play games on card on a deck of cards, or any other kind of like creative game aspect deck of cards. But if we're talking aces and spades and hearts and jokers and all that stuff, I'm completely lost.
I don't subscribe to any administered and formulated form of entertainment. I find it constricting and I get antsy and I don't like being held in one place. So anyone who brings out a game who knows me knows that I'm probably going to find a reason to bolt. And I have bad memory. So in terms of remembering rules is hard. In terms of starting games, I find it hard. There's a social pressure and I'm slow to pick up things, oddly. But yeah, I'm not a big fan. The only game that I do quite like, which I actually got as part of a family member's birthday present, is Uno, which is quite a simple card game, which played a lot when I was when I was at university doing my master's, and we played a lot of that in the car, in the, and that had a flip function, the one that I got my family member, which is a slight amendment to it. But yeah, generally speaking, no. But there's some brilliant board games out there now, and games and card games. I've never really got board games. Again, the rules can be quite hard, but if you get behind them, there's some really innovative. But I remember, in terms of Doctor Who, I remember trying things like Doctor Who board games in the 80s, and they were difficult, and the FASA role-playing game was not exactly clear
No.
in a lot of its rules.
No. Some of the annuals had games in them as well, didn't they?
And there was nothing that really sort of spoke well, and then the Virgin Time Lord role-playing didn't really work any better, their role-playing game. I was kind of like Trumps, though. I look back, actually, I know we're going on a tangent. I was looking back through the internets at some of the sort of Marvel top Trump cards I had. There was two packs, one for villains and one for heroes. And if anyone who's listening to this had the same, because I know most of you are old and nearing death, I don't know. I'd totally forgotten about them. And again, it's one of the wonders of where one of the few wonders we have in the time that we're in is that ability to be able to literally sort of dig holes in your nostalgia and in your life through the internet in your home and find these things which you'd totally forgotten about, and it's so different. And again, to divulge, I was listening to a vidcast of with Stuart Lee, and Stuart Lee was talking about getting into music in the 80s and how it was just so much more difficult if there was a band that you liked that you couldn't just sort of pull it up on Google. You actually literally had to sort of leave your town and go to your nearest city and then be hunting around markets. And even then, you'd be sort of calling its name as if you were like a some sort of detective. That it was a very weird sort of way to live compared to how we live now. I remember hearing a song on, I can't remember what show it was. It was a song by a band called Compulsion. It was called More Monarchy. And I really liked it. I remember going to Cambridge the next day and starting to ask, and I couldn't remember the band name. And you heard it once on
Yeah.
television, and that was it. If you haven't recorded it, where else would you find it? And
All right.
I think I was looking, I was asking for convulsion rather than compulsion.
Oh.
But that's it. You just didn't have the way to actually explore and find your stuff. And now, the way that we can just dig through our memories, and if I wanted to go and relive the days of FASA, Doctor Who, or Time Lord Doctor Who, or their terrible board game, I could do that very easily.
Yeah. I once sent my mum to, I think it was W.H. Smith, to buy a copy of an album by Van Halen in 1991 called For Unlawful Carnal Knowledge.
Yep, is that the Van Halen?
Yeah. And yeah, she was a little bit embarrassed. But yeah, you're right. I mean, I was never really one for looking for stuff like that. I would always limit myself to magazines. But
But it's just interesting to show that it's just interesting the value of information
yeah,
and
definitely,
how the
yeah.
value of information has dropped. That, and we've said this before, that back, like in the 80s, the Peter Hanning books were pretty much all you had
Yes.
in terms of getting any data out of about Doctor Who outside of the Doctor Who magazine.
Oh yeah, I used to sit in W.H. Smith and read the Virgin reference books on the various doctors, having like £5 in my pocket, and only being able to buy one book, and those books being £1 more. So I would have to buy one of the new adventures, which were £4.99. I couldn't afford one of the reference books.
But I
Or
remember they did those. Do you remember those encyclopedias that they did, the Doctor Who encyclopedia? And I don't think they even got as far as K or S. I don't know if they finished the range, but they were
right.
expensive,
No, I don't remember
and
that.
they were worth looking for on various browsers just to see what it was. But they were like hardback, as I recall, A to Z of Doctor Who, and it was
Right.
like A to E is one book, then F to H. So they were milking it. And the material in them was nothing really amazing. And if you knew Doctor Who and you'd read Doctor Who magazine and obviously you'd read the Peter Hanning books, and there was nothing in there which gave you any new data. But that was the back end of the 80s or early 90s, they were. And there was so much, I'm kind of annoyed thinking back of how much they milked us on rubbish because they knew we had nothing, so they could
Yeah.
give us anything. And so we would get these terrible encyclopedias, like an encyclopedia salesman, as they had back in the day.
I think it's quite interesting the difference in depth between 1980s Doctor Who magazine and 1990s Doctor Who magazine, where it becomes a kind of a must-have reference for everything Doctor Who, whereas in the 1980s, it'd only been going a year in the 70s, or just say the 1980s, it's only part comic. It's a bit kind of smashy looking in kind of the depth and quality, isn't it? And in the 90s, when there's nothing on TV, it's kind of like the survive or die aspect is pack the magazine with as much useful information reference material as possible, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I remember I think back of the 80s, because I remember it was around the time that Doctor Who was dying, around about 88, and the Doctor magazine then was starting to get better. Retrospectively looking back, it was starting to get better. Yeah, they had their comic strip, but it was not. It was, I think they were doing things like the Sleaze Brothers at the time, which was a spin-off, which I quite enjoyed, of the Blues Brothers, a rip-off of the Blues Brothers. And there was stuff in there which was starting to get interesting. They were starting, like, their nostalgia things. They talk about Tomb of the Cybermen before Tomb of the Cybermen came out, and seeing how people talked about it was very disappointing when I actually watched it, and it wasn't as claustrophobic as everyone remembered. But yeah, I think you're right. When you get to the 90s, and then also by the 90s, sci-fi is starting to game up. And starting, with things like SFX and Dreamwatch, TV Zone, you needed to start delivering the content, didn't you? And you were obviously getting people who are into this stuff who are now getting at an age where they'd start to realize when they were being ripped off and had the money to actually go elsewhere.
Yeah, and it's a good point. I mentioned Doctor Who magazine when I did, because there's something else that I didn't mention at the top of the show, which makes it sound like a radio broadcast. I've just got Vought Vorp issue 4 a couple of days ago, and although it's not about Doctor Who magazine on this occasion, it's about TV comics and stuff. It is. I kind of usually when these come out, we get Gareth on to talk, but I feel like maybe we should get a few more people in to talk about it. It is a weighty 171 pages, I've got the kind of John Pertwee riding a bike cover, and it also comes with a pretend. My children were absolutely entranced by this. A pretend cereal packet. Are called Sugar Pats, formerly Billy Puffs, and so yeah, and it as ever with these productions from Gareth Cavan. Oh, and it also comes with stickers from Gareth and Colin Brockhurst. It's just beautifully produced. So, and yeah, I think the last one they did, I think I did a video review of, which was fun to do, but I think it'd be good to get Ellie comes back on the mic again. I think it'd be good to get a few other people involved with that on the podcast in the near future. This is nothing to do with Doctor Who at all. I've just had a building built in the back garden, and I'm going to be moving my base of, it's going to become my base of operations. And once it's plastered and electrified, I don't mean it's like a torture chamber or anything like that. I mean, it's going to have electrical points and everything like that. And I'm looking forward to that. Don't know why I mentioned it. I'm just excited by it. It will be soundproofed as well. So that's for recording things. It's not for any illicit purposes. Anyway, back to Doctor Who Flux with 1X, the new series of Doctor Who, which is kicking off in a couple of weeks' time. I think we're going to make an effort to review each episode, aren't we, with a new podcast?
We haven't talked about it, but yeah,
Yeah, we probably
or
will.
maybe we have.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know.
I don't think we have. We
Excitement,
have in my
yes.
head, and I thought it'd go, the conversation would go pretty much like this. So that's one thing. Doctor Who, the first episode will air on Halloween on Sunday, the 31st of October. Now, that's a good time to put it on. It's also a bad time to put it on because we don't know what time it's going to be on. And there could be kids out knocking on doors. Not only will they miss it, they'll also interrupt you watching it, dear listener. That's a bit. I guess it's there for the fear factor. So it will run until the 5th of December. That's the last episode. And then there is a new episode on New Year, one in the spring, and then a final episode in the autumn, which will, that's autumn 2022, to tie in with the celebrations planned to mark the BBC's 100th birthday. So, yeah, monsters making a comeback in Flux, as you've probably seen from the trailer. The Weeping Angels, the Sontarans, the Ood, and the Cybermen. I'm pretty sure there's a bit of Dalek technology in there as well, if not any actual Daleks, and the Ravagers. Slash Ravages. It's difficult to tell whether this is the Ravages of. There's Ravages in Big Finish, isn't there? As I
Is it?
understand. As I
Probably.
understand it, yeah.
Yes.
And it was difficult to tell from the captioning on the teaser trailer. Because that said Ravages rather than Ravagers, so we will find
Well,
out.
it'd be interesting if they do tie it into Big Finish, because again, it's going back to the whole idea of
Yeah.
sort of creative commercial awareness. When you see things like, the Star Trek franchise doing their very popular Lower Decks, which is, an animation, but is, despite it being essentially a comedy drama, it still ties in to what they're doing in other things. They've got it in their own chronology timeline. They can draw in actors, and there's a sort of far more there's a synergy there, which Doctor Who hasn't really had with Big Finish. So they did a crossover the other way, apart from obviously the off the cuff comment that we had McGann have in Day of the Doctors episode. It kind of, to me, makes sense. Why they've not done it, I've no idea. There's certainly never been a sort of two-way communication or creativity. As we know, Andy's a joke with many fans. Big Finish will pick up literally anything they can from the TV series and capitalize on it. But you don't see it the other way around. And it's a kind of a weird thing, because the more coverage you give to your franchise, if you get people even investing a little in a Big Finish because of what you put on your TV show, that has a fallback in essentially tying them closer to your franchise. So even if it's not really a money earner, depending again on the relationship between Big Finish and Doctor Who IP, I just don't, it's weird. It's just almost very British. It's a very compartmentalized way, institutionalized way of working your creativity. And I imagine there's also legal implications as well, which could be a factor in it, in terms of what is owned by Big Finish. Might not necessarily be what Doctor Who as a parent can use, I don't know. But it just feels very weird that there's never been that sort of crossover. But then they've never really done it. They've never done any crossovers really with the comics. And I know people say, well, it's a mainstream show. You don't do that sort of thing. It doesn't, but it, you know, people don't have time to read that. But it's not about making literal crossovers where you have to read the comic as well.
No.
But it's just like, you know, if you've got something good that's worked in an audio or in a comic, you know, is it worth negotiating to, you know, expand on that and thus expand on that character, which might expand on its IP, you know, on its profitability as maybe merchandise or toys? I don't know. I think I suppose I'm saying that there's a lack of sort of commercial venture almost, commercial risk in changing the infrastructure. Because I suppose in a weird way, Doctor Who, I mean, Big Finish is the is the father, or certainly the uncle to the TV show. You know, it was running in the 90s. It's not like it came up after the new production started
No.
and has links to it. It's worked at its own on its own little pace, in its own little world, in its own little commercial space before Russell T. Davies, you know, appeared, you know, in 2005. And it just kind of feels like there's been no motivation. And maybe there has been. I mean, I would certainly be surprised if people like Russell or Moffat, Davies or Moffat, didn't reach out or there weren't talks about it because, you know, they love that stuff as far as I'm aware.
Maybe it just
But it
turned
kind
out
of
to be
feels like it should have
complicated.
happened in some way.
Yeah, I'd go along with that. I think as well, I mean, in terms of lack of imagination on how to execute things, and this kind of takes back to the video games as well. The only Doctor Who video game experience I've found to be just like fun and engaging is the Lego Dimensions implementation. I mean, in many ways, Edge of Reality is. I mean, this is an unfair comparison, but it bears a lot of resemblance in terms of the player, the position of the player in the game, to Destiny of the Doctors, which is a game that came out, dear listener, in the late 90s, wasn't it? And it isn't a great gaming experience. But you are put in a similar position. There's no ridiculously camp Anthony Ainley scenes, but there is the use the player kind of being a cipher for the doctor, being given instructions by the doctor and helping the doctor to escape from some uncertain fate. So it isn't, you know, there are key similarities there, and some of the confusing controls and the inability to jump as well is also included. But anyway, we should probably move on because there is this other kind of news hanging over us. I get regular emails from PR companies affiliated with William Hill about who's going to be the 14th Doctor Who. Over the past few weeks, we've had Ollie Alexander, Lydia West, and Tania Miller, and all three of those have all worked with Russell T. Davies previously, and we've got odds there ranging from 1 to 2 favourite for Ollie Alexander, to 8 to 1 for Lydia West, and 5, no, and 7 to 1 for Tania Miller. Although I believe that's probably shorter now. And there's also been the cryptic hint from David Tennant, asked if he would return. It all depends. The moment you say yes to Doctor Who, even before you've done an episode, you're being asked whether you'd go back after you finish. I don't know if this happens to James Bond. I don't know if Pierce Brosnan gets asked if he'd go back to James Bond because there's that element of fantasy. Anything is ultimately possible. You should never say never to anything. I think that way madness lies. So he's not saying no. There are other names in the mix, as you probably know by now. There's, I know James does because we talked about this in the Missing podcast.
What sort of toilet was it again?
I'll look it up next time you're having one of your
Okay.
long talks, okay?
Okay. Okay.
We've got Reese Fans and Richard Ayoade at 8 to 1, as is Rose Matafeo. Ben Miller is at 12 to 1, Michaela Cole 7 to 1, and I think we were both interested, weren't we, in Alfred Enoch, who's the son of William Russell.
Yes.
He was at 50 to 1, and I think he's quite an interesting possibility. I did have a chat with Gareth Cavanagh about this, and he's kind of keen on the Michael Sheen. But one part of me thinks, yeah. The other part of me thinks, well, if you're going to go for Michael Sheen, maybe you're just going to go for David Tennant again anyway. You know what I mean? So.
Well, as we said, I mean, Doctor Who and its buzz has always centered around, a lot of its,
Hang on, is
where
this
it
going to be a
promotes
long
itself.
talk? Do you want me to do the Twitter thing
Could
now?
be. Well,
Yeah.
yeah, we can do that as well.
Go on then.
It's very much on the sort of buzz of the discourse that surrounds sort of the new Doctor Who. And ultimately, I think it's what is that discourse going to be? Is it going to be negative? Is it going to be positive? Is it going to speculate? As soon as you get a named actor who is known fairly well for similar sorts of genre roles, and I'm thinking predominantly, I'm thinking things like Good Omens, do you end up sort of nullifying some of that conversation? People will be like, oh, it's Michael Sheen. He'll be quite good. I imagine he'll do it like this. Is that a risk? I mean, yes, he has a global, he is a global name, which again, if we're looking at Bad Wolf being picked up by Sony Pictures Television, could suggest that a global outreach is on the cards, certainly an expansion of Cardiff from what I read, then maybe someone like Michael Sheen could be likely. I just think it kind of, and I don't want to sound like it's a tradition, because I abhor people who overly hold us to traditions. Having been watching Downton Abbey is kind of weird, but I do wonder, whether that's something which kind of will lose some of the PR spark. Because I mean, I'm sure he'd be great because he's a great actor, but would he really bring anything to the show that hasn't been done before? And this is one of the reasons why we looked at Jodie, why we kind of liked the idea of Jodie Whittaker, was is that I suspect this wasn't to do with any sort of tick box exercise, as some people say. It's genuinely about trying to find a way of creating that buzz. And how do you do it when you've had, 50 years of, middle-aged, British white guys? How do you create that? And you've had old ones, you've had young ones, you've had Scottish ones, you've had English ones. It's not to say
Scouse
that you
ones.
don't. Yeah, absolutely. And it doesn't mean that you don't have, there aren't any other options there, and that's to be ignored. I'm just saying that if you're looking to try and create a buzz, you want to create a buzz without people going, oh, it's another Peter Davison, or oh, it looks like they're going back to Troughton again. It just doesn't kind of work. So maybe that is, in a sense, why Michael Sheen might not work. You need something that is different, which makes people talk and then proves them right or wrong, hopefully right. And in most cases, they have been right, I think. I don't think there's, in fairness, I don't think any of the casting has been necessarily wrong. I think they've treated certain doctors wrong. I think Colin Baker had got wrong. It wasn't Colin who was the mistake, but how they decided to go with Colin was a problem.
And Capaldi?
Capaldi was a mix, wasn't it? It was three seasons of different characters, as they couldn't really find the space, the zone for him. And I think they pretty much found it at the end.
Yeah. Did you hear his record?
No.
No. Yeah, we'll move on from that then. Anyway, I found it. They found the tweet. Absolute toilet.
Okay.
So apparently, we said absolute toilet in that podcast, and it amused Bonobo Bananas. Long-term listener.
I kind of thought it would be something a little more colourful and unusual than that. But
well, there you go. Can't be helped.
Disappointing, and I put effort in for that to cover the
yes, thanks.
The mechanisms.
Listen, I just remembered something that I did a few days ago, which is kind of exciting.
Okay.
So as a favour to someone I've already mentioned in this week's podcast, I hosted a Zoom meeting conversation commentary that with Bob Baker and Joan Stribling, the makeup designer.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just basically listened as they talked about, and I mean, I don't know how much of this I can say, so I won't say which episode it was. Although you could probably cross-reference it if you weren't feeling that way out. It was really interesting. Really good. Really enjoyed it. I barely interacted. I just basically hosted it, recorded everything, and then packed off the files and that. But, it was really good.
Excellent.
Yeah. So I can't tell you anything.
No, excellent. Well, to sort of break that dead end that you've created.
Yes.
I did notice, and correct me if I'm wrong, because I'm sure I read this rather than dreamt it, that I mean, obviously, first of all, that Jodie Whittaker and BBC have come out that Doctor Who's wrapped, so they've done the full
Yes.
seasons. And I'm sure I read somewhere that she'd said that the regeneration sequence had been done, but she was not privy to who the next person was, and that was not, there was no handover.
What if she's fibbing and there
Well,
was
I
no
mean,
regeneration sequence and they're ending the
in the
show?
name of Andrew Garfield, are you saying someone could be fibbing?
I'm saying that maybe going back to David Tennant, how do you get David Tennant back into Doctor Who very easily?
Yeah.
Half human doctor.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And I think we've said in that previous podcast, I think that is the sort of thing which could be on the cards. And
Yeah.
maybe the way Doctor Who is, as we've been talking today, is going, that would seem more likely that you could do a show or bring a doctor back, and you've got ways of doing it, or even do an American version of the show with a an aging human David Tennant doctor.
Who doesn't know is who presumably can't regenerate as well, which brings some nice extra drama into when he decides he's going to leave the show. What's going to happen?
Of course, Big Finish will be like, "Whoa, whoa, hang on! I think we've covered Rose Tyler in the alternate universe. We don't really want you going there." But that's the beauty of Doctor Who, isn't it? That you just—I think they have anyway, as far as I recall. But that's Doctor Who, isn't it? Constantly folding in on itself, which is part of its fun.
Yes. Like Castrovalva.
Well, very much so, like an episode of Castrovalva. Yes.
Shall we? I mean, there isn't an awful lot we can say about Flux at the moment, other
No,
than
I thought
it's
the
quite a
trailer was
short
good.
series.
The trailer was good. I thought
Yes,
it
it
was
was a
nicely
good trailer,
edited
yeah.
and put together. Entirely pretty.
What I would have liked to have done is us both watch it and then like shout out the villain names, but that would have been quite silly. So maybe
Yeah,
we
and it
shouldn't
would
have
only
done
be
that.
new because I would partake in such silliness. I would
Okay,
sit
fair
back and
enough.
let you
Yes.
deal with that.
Yeah.
I
No,
don't want
yeah,
to
no.
admit that I know what a centauran is, and see the ramifications of it sitting on a horse. I'm playing that continuity game, mate. I've got my dignity. But yeah, I thought it was a good trailer. I think it did a lot. I think it promoted what it was doing well. I think the Flux looks fun and exciting, and maybe again a sort of awareness of the way that sort of Marvel has been making color palettes very much part of its sort of invigorating those sort of superhero franchises, from Guardians of the Galaxies on, and the dip in Ragnarok to the 80s. I kind of get that vibe with Doctor Who there as well. Let's
Potentially,
make it
yeah.
colourful, lots of greens, lots of blues, and then obviously this links to the Flux, and this links to our trademark design for the logo. Yeah.
So, Sony, are they going to make a Doctor Who movie because they've bought a majority share in Bad Wolf Productions? A lot of people think that that might be the way things are going. It probably doesn't really mean that at all, really, though, anyway, because I think I'm right in saying they've bought a majority shareholding from a couple of other companies, and I'm desperately trying to find my notes on this, and I can't find them at the moment. So basically, it's not Sony Cinema, it's Sony Television that are involved. So it's a movie would seem unlikely at this time, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I would probably think so. I'm not. I'd be interested as well whether, I don't know whether the movie industry at the moment is something which you would rush into.
Exactly. I mean, you could
Whether
have a
you know
movie
who.
on a streaming service. That would be one thing.
Yes,
But like
that would
a
be more
cinematic
likely.
theatrical release, I mean, there's an article in one of the broadsheets today that No Time to Die may have saved British cinema, or even cinema around the world. But I think that's, if one movie can do that, then maybe it wasn't in such a bad state. And I would say it probably has been in quite a bad state for being shut for best part of 18 months or a year for most of the planet.
Well, we'll see. You have to see where it goes. I mean, obviously, as soon as the cinema industry opened up, the first things coming out of any sort of public cultural significance are going to be big things because people have been unable to go out much. So it's hard to sort of say how things will go, and also it depends on how things go in terms of pandemics and the likes, which, we've still got some of that sort of stuff we're dealing with, and how that could affect things still. I don't know. I just kind of feel that, again, it's not, I mean, Sony Pictures Television, Bad Wolf, which is going to be doing Doctor Who, amongst other things it'll be doing. I don't know. I don't see a film out of that. I
No,
think
I
it's,
see leverage into Netflix,
yeah,
to be
I
honest.
think things like that. I think maybe that would be the route to go.
Here's the figures here. The His Dark Materials producer, co-founded in 2015 by Jane Charnton and Julie Gardner, is set to join Left Banc Pictures owner Sony in a deal thought to be worth close to £60 million. Existing minority shareholders Access Entertainment and Sky HBO are expected to have their respective 24.9 and 10% stakes bought out as part of the agreement, leaving Sony as the sole majority shareholder.
Okay, that's interesting.
So,
But
yeah.
I mean, in the end, it could be just a sort of distribution thing.
It
You know,
could be just a distribution thing, yeah.
it's with that sort of money. I think people could sort of jump to the wrong conclusions. I think it's interesting. I think what it does show is the value within Bad Wolf. I think that's a good thing, a positive thing.
Yeah.
I think as a part of it, as being bought out by global players, probably not a bad thing for the show. But what it actually means in terms of content, I don't know whether we will really see. Yeah, I mean, BBC's held Doctor Who for countless years, not seen any big movies and, vast amounts of extra material coming out in the last 10 years.
Well, that's the thing with
So.
BBC, isn't it? I mean, one look on, I subscribe to BritBox. Good option if you have children and you want to get them into Doctor Who, because it's got all the classic Doctor Who, and it's also got the Sarah Jane Adventures, which my children have
Oh,
been
cool.
watching. And they've just finished episode two of Warriors of the Kudlak, or Warriors of Kudlak. And yeah, they are really, really enjoying it. And Blake Seven's on there as well, and all of the Gerry Anderson stuff, and Sapphire and Steel. I put Sapphire and Steel on.
Could you throw away your DVD collection if you've got access to it on subscription?
You could,
But
but I
you wouldn't.
won't. Well, I mean, just think of the landfill if I did that. I mean, I'm someone who doesn't have a microwave on principle, not just the power and the radiation and the interference with other things, which it's bad enough having those things like Wi-Fi and radio phones, but also because I don't believe that they really cook your food for you properly. And also, I don't have a dishwasher because of the massive amount of detergent that's involved and the impact that that has. And I know I'm just one person, and most people have
No, I think it's
dishwashers,
good.
and that might be something as my children grow and start eating more, as they have done in the past couple of years. It is a decision that regularly pops up and challenges me. So,
But here's the thing. I
yeah.
mean, we are our choices, as you say, are unique and they don't have a massive impact. But we are inherently boring creatures.
Yes,
And for every
sorry, I didn't
one
mean to.
Christian, for every one Christian Crawley, there are ultimate other Christian Crawleys in a gestalt way working at the same time who are probably coming to the same decisions you have. So in a sense, it kind of feels like our actions are sort of, in a way, sort of either leading or sustaining a force of identical versions of ourselves across the country who will feel in the same way.
Yeah.
So what you do probably reflects a movement far bigger than you and thus makes your choices far more valuable
Perhaps.
to
And
yourself.
did you know I was looking something up?
No, I didn't. I
Okay.
was just going on it because I thought I was being interesting, but probably
No,
not.
you were. It was very useful of you to start talking when you did,
That's
really.
good. Well, you can rely on me.
Because a couple of weeks ago, now, you highlighted a Twitter thread to me, didn't you? In
Oh,
which
yes.
some photo copies of letters sent by Doctor Who director Peter Grimwade in 1981, following Logopolis production wrapping, to Delore Whiteman, and another one to Matthew Waterhouse. And I'm going to read them to you. And dear Dolore, it now seems a long time since we ended the filming, but in fact we've only just finished the final recording of Logopolis, so I'm writing somewhat belatedly to say thank you again for your very splendid performance. I have just finished editing together the complete version of episode 1, and I am delighted with your quite delicious portrayal of Aunt Vanessa. You really are the favourite of everyone who has been involved with the assembly of the programme, and I think that one or two of your fellow artists are quite relieved that you die at the end of episode 1. I very much hope that you get lots of work while you are in the UK. I'm sure that the Doctor Who, and yes, it does say the Doctor Who, will do a bit to help in this respect. I hope that we can work together again in the future. Best wishes. And the letter to Matthew Waterhouse. He writes, Dear Matthew, thank you for your work on Logopolis. I hope you enjoy the 4 episodes when they start transmission on the 28th of February. Best wishes. Now, I mean, placed together in that kind of juxtaposed, nice, florid, and affectionate, followed by brief and somewhat cold, you might be forgiven for thinking that Peter Grimway didn't like Matthew Waterhouse, but I mean, we don't really think that's the case, do we? Do we?
Didn't we do this on another podcast? This wasn't last week.
Wasn't it?
No, I think we did a podcast.
Well, we've actually talked about this on a podcast.
I have a feeling we have.
Have we?
I'm not 100% because I don't listen to them.
Oh, okay. Hang on a minute. Let me just say when the last podcast was. Last time we did a podcast that got published was on September the 26th, and this was posted on the 8th of October.
That's impossible. Okay. So maybe we did talk about it last week. I can't believe we talked about it last week, did we?
Yeah, I think we did talk about it last week. Yeah. The thing about October, I've noticed, is that although it's a long month, it goes very quickly.
Yeah, it's all the birthdays.
Oh, God, have I missed my cousin's birthday?
It's Matt Smith's birthday, yeah.
No, he's not my cousin.
No, well...
This is taking a surreal turn, hasn't it?
Stop me from making comments about it. I don't need to have to justify every comment I make by whether they are blood relative to me.
Anyway.
Quirky world we live in.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, okay. I can't pretend I'm not phoning this in a bit. We've talked about this. It's an odd comment, but the Cliff Notes, I suppose, essentially is, and I feel I'm shortchanging you, dear listener, but sorry, I've already talked about this.
It is an amusing thing to check out, and you know, there'll be show notes, it'll be linked in there, and you can have a look at it.
It's worth looking at, and I think it's worth looking at because I think it's historically interesting, and I think it's, I think we've also got to remember that there's a difference between a guest actor and one of the principal cast,
yes,
which is what Matthew was. And we don't see what, I mean, if Sarah Sutton got as longer a message or as small a message as Matthew did, then, you know, we could sort of make a better comparison of, but I think on its own, the Twitter thread is a lot of fun. Because it is funny in the way that you see this long letter, and you see this tiny letter to Matthew, because it builds into our fan culture's assumptions and how it looks at magic, how it constructs Adric and Matthew Waterhouse. So it's funny. But I'd also at the same time think it's good that we are aware that it doesn't mean that Grimwade was having any sort of, had any dislike or was shortchanging Matthew. I think that would be cruel and unfair, but it's funny. And there's another one, isn't there? There's another one further down.
To Beryl Reed, yeah.
Yeah, which is kind of good, and there's no Matthew Waterhouse one to go on that, which would have been interesting because that was his final show. And maybe that would be one to have seen to see what was said to Matthew on his out from Doctor Who. But yeah, it's a lot of fun. And again, to see it typed, and see the errors in the type,
yes,
in the typewriter.
Yep.
It's a nice bit of history to see. Yes. And I never knew that Grimway did that sort of thing. So it's, again, I find it interesting to see those sort of letters went out, you know, on paper, posted, you know, take a day to get somewhere, opened, revealed, and then put aside.
Yeah, because these days it's all been bills and fanzines and papers, isn't it? Thick wads of paper come through the door and people expect you to read them.
Yeah. What did you do with them? I don't remember. You know, what do you dispose of? Because I mean, I still get letters occasionally, which I shouldn't, because I thought I'd told them they're all online now. But ultimately, it's, you know, post is Parcels and things. I don't, it's just so weird to think of a letter coming through the post and reading it and deciding whether that's valuable and I should keep it. Where do I keep it? How do I keep it? I can't remember how I used to keep them. I remember I used to keep my old copies of John Fitton catalogue because I was that was the sad boy I was. I used to look forward to seeing what sci-fi artifacts he had. Did you have John Fitton? I know we've talked about this before in 11 years, 10 years.
I don't even know what that is.
John Fitton, you don't know John Fitton?
No.
Okay, John Fitton was, and I'm doing him a favour, decades too late, was a very was a small mail order,
All right.
which was predominantly Doctor Who,
Oh.
but did other things as well. And it would
Right.
be one of those typical sort of late 80s. I remember being a kid and
The only
seeing
time I ever went near
Neil
mail
Gaiman.
order was for Commodore 64 games. And
Yes, I did
cartridges
that as
and
well because
discs
that was
and
the cheaper
things.
way to get them was through the mail order, and where there was no, they had nowhere, they had no shop overhead, so you were they were giving you the cheaper prices. But yeah, John Fitton was a mail order catalogue, and I think a lot of fans will have old fans like that have memories of getting the John Fitton catalogue and looking through its typed, photocopied, typed pages of listings of various things which were coming out, or you could order. They range from books. All the books would be on the back for novelizations, key rings, belt buckles and models and figures, and each section would be in there. And every time one would come out, it'd obviously be slightly different because it'd be different content. And that was the exciting thing. Again, it's the value of a list of sellable items was far bigger than it is now when, everything can be found everywhere, and it's just about looking to see which is the best option for you in terms of cheapness and maybe ethics.
That's crazy that. Do you know, I've been get, I may have mentioned this on another recent podcast. I've been getting a magazine. It's essentially a fanzine, but it's produced professionally for money, called Amiga Addict, and it's all about
Okay.
the Amiga. And someone suggested that they include classic adverts,
Yeah.
which would be really interesting because I really love old
Oh
adverts.
God, so do I. In any research I've done, I mean, I just for fun, I like going to archive.org, and you can go through various old magazines, computer, cinema, and the joy is looking at the adverts.
I once saw on eBay someone was selling framed, mostly full color adverts from 1970s and 80s sort of magazines, but the full page adverts. So basically, they ripped the adverts out of the magazine, or probably cut them very neatly out of the magazine, and then framed them, and they were selling them for like £10 a pop.
But I mean, there's some really fascinating things. There's if you get to see any of the old sort of PDFs of Yours Sinclair and Sinclair User and Spectrum age, and so we're talking 80s, mid to late 80s, and there's some really fascinating adverts in there. There's one that I remember looking at, which was really interesting, which was like a role playing game. But you phoned in, so there were call costs charges. But it was being aimed at getting for lonely men to meet women through playing the adventure game, which was this weird computer but done through the phone. Weird. I never really quite understood how it worked, but that sort of weird amalgamation of it being a chat line and yet also a game. And you get some weird, bizarre things as they
Well, the
try to work out
1980s
what the
was,
hell to do with these this new era.
basically, we talk and people remember the times. We'll regularly refer to the teletext as the kind of the internet of the 80s. And maybe it was to an extent, but I think the French had it a lot better because theirs was two way. So they could do things, they could like book tickets through their TV
Fine.
using their method. But here in the UK, we didn't have that. But I think the way the telephone was used is a lot of people have forgotten. You could. Yeah, I mean, obviously there was the speaking clock. You could ring up and listen to Radio One on your phone. I mean, I can't think of. I mean, I tried it because I thought it was funny, but I can't think of any situation where you'd be that desperate to listen to Radio One that you'd pick up a phone to listen to Radio One and pay for it when you've already paid your TV license. There's probably a radio somewhere really close by anyway. And there was all sorts of things you could ring up for, and that was just from the BBC, you know, weather reports and storm, you know, reports for fishermen and reports for farmers. And, you know, then you'd have like Agony Ant lines and stuff like that, and you'd have the chat lines and the adult chat lines. You'd have, I'm pretty sure there was gambling lines as well. So yeah, it's interesting looking back at it. People kind of just forget, you know, they just think of the speaking clock and dirty phone lines, but there was a lot more going on with the telephone in the 80s.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the beautiful thing of looking at these sort of old artifacts is that we tend to remember similar big things, but we will forget those tinier things. And like I say, there are multiple Christian Corleys, and they will all remember the bigger things, but they will not remember the small things. And those are the things you see in those adverts, those in the letter pages, and in those bits where you're getting that sort of real crossover with culture, where it's not those things are not just about Doctor Who or video games or pop music. There's those things where the crossover, the adverts, the interaction of the people, and I think that's where they're really interesting and sort of picking up the feelings of those times. Yes.
Nurse, he's gone again. But I mean, yeah, I mean, I'm looking for a way to wrap up the podcast,
I don't know. I've just imagined just suddenly looking up and realizing I'm in a nursing home, and this is all just one big delusion. The nurse is coming over crossly. Kevin, you're talking again. Calm down.
yeah, so.
Was no future. This is 1919. You do not live in the 21st century. You've not watched a show called Doctor Who. You've been reading too many of those Jules Verne novels. Sorry.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's human nature, isn't it, though, basically? The story, not human nature, the philosophical concept. That brings us to the end of this week's Doctor Who podcast from Cast Erebus. Everything we've talked about in the show notes, just click it and read it. And if you haven't heard us before, please subscribe. You can subscribe to us in every way that you subscribe to stuff on apps and Apple, and even by RSS. Until next time, it's goodbye from us.
Do you think there were Kevins in 1919?
No.
I can't imagine there being a Kevin in 1919. When did that name come out?